it's a bit warm for spring. I think summer might have arrived a little bit of summer, perhaps a proper bit of spring here in Connecticut, where I am, where my guest is as well, actually, funny enough. But yes, it's been up in the 70s odd, I think. We had a bit of 80 even perhaps one day, I don't know. It's hot though, and I was just telling my guest that we had solar paneling put in the winter, and one of the things they do is do a sort of an energy assessment of your house, and you know, make sure you've got no leaks and replace the bulbs with the low energy bulbs and all this sort of stuff. Well, they did such a good job, it's like a blinking oven in here now, never mind the heat. We need to get extra fans in to keep it cool. But I am here, and so is my guest. Now, growing up, one of the things I always remember is, you remember you sort of driving in the car or what have you, or listening to something, and say something comes on and says, born this day. And especially, and then you think, hey, when it's your birthday, I think, who was born on the same day? What famous person do I share my birthday with? Well, we'll find out about that today. Also, and one of the things, I know I normally have the sort of music quizzes on my music shows on a Sunday, but how about this? Can you tell me the link between Gene and the Genials, the Embers, Jamie and Jane, and Brian? I bet you can't, but I bet you my guest can. Anyway, we'll find out, because on the show today, I have the one and only David McGrath. Hi, David. How are you doing?
Hey, Barry. Great to talk to you, because it's always great to talk about Gene Pitney, and I thank you for the invitation.
Well, as I said, you've given it away. Gene Pitney, same birthday as me. exactly the same, a few years before me, but February 17th is Gene Pitney's birthday, and I was like 12 years after him. But you don't count about that, but it is. I mean, when you remember on the radio or television or even in the papers, it used to have, you know, born this day, and you wait till it's your birthday, say, who else was born on my day? And I always remember Gene Pitney was, who, of course, comes originally from Hartford. Well, is it Hartford? No, Rockville, wasn't it? I think in Connecticut here, where I am. I'm in Bristol, just down the road, so not too far away. But that's where he was born, wasn't it?
He was born in Rockville, which is now, he lived in Summers. That's when
right,
he died.
Yeah.
He was living in Summers. But yes, he was born in Rockville.
Right, yeah. Which
the
is
Rockville Rocket, they called him.
Not far from me. Not that far from me, Rockville. I think about 20 miles, possibly, if that. But yeah, it's interesting because, you know, well, he died in Wales, didn't he, in the end, if I remember right? Did he die in Wales?
He did. He was. He had done a show at St. David's Hall in Cardiff, Wales. This is 2006.
Yeah.
And he walked off the stage, and his musical director, is a longtime musical director, is Morris Mary. He looked at Morris and said, great show tonight. See you tomorrow. Went to his hotel. And as far as we can tell, and I can explain all that to you later on, he died peacefully in his sleep after a sold-out show at St. David's Hall in Cardiff, Wales, April 5th, 2006.
That's right, yeah. It's funny, I can, you know, people say, you know, where would an entertainer, that's the word I'm going to call, you know, entertainer sort of, you finish their last act on stage and everything. And I always remember Tommy Cooper. We were watching the Tommy Cooper show on television, live on television, and he sort of was in this great big coat thing, and he just sort of, you know, collapsed to the floor slowly, and everybody thought it was part of the show, part of the TV recording. But they never came back. He died on the stage there and then, in front of, you know, millions, I guess, of people watching on television, sort of thing. It's
very sad.
Yeah,
very sad.
Go back to my quiz at the beginning. Because all those groups or solo names or duet names, in fact, were all names that Gene Pitney sung under in the early years or sung with. Is that right?
That is right. And the one that's not on that list, at one point, one record person wanted to name him Homer Muzzy.
As in Muzzy Field in Bristol, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yes. Gene absolutely said no to that. But on the way up, you know, before you are a star, before you've accomplished some things, you have to do what other people tell you to do if you want to get places. So along the way, he did compromise a little bit. Jamie and Jane was a duet he performed with Ginny Arnell.
Okay.
That was her stage
That's
name.
That's who it was. I couldn't think who it was. Right, yeah.
Right, her real name was Ginny DeCola. Ginny had one small hit here in the United States called Dumbhead. Probably a mid-chart song in mm-hmm. most cities. She did not have much success after Jamie and Jane broke up, but Gene and Ginny stayed friends. The Embers, that was way back when, and that's just one of those things where it just happened to come together at a recording studio. Gene was there, the Embers were there. The producer said, why don't we do this? And so that's how that happened. He did record under the name Billy Bryan
right,
for
yep.
one or two records on Festival.
Ah,
and was there another one?
Festivals, that's a really old one. The other group was Gene and the Genials. I think that's when he was
That was a group he formed in high school
yeah.
with his friend, Gene and the Genials. And as all high school boys do when they want to get girls, they join a band. And that that was the first and primary reason to start the band, as well as Gene having such a gift with his voice and his ability to write songs and sing songs.
Because that's what I was going to say, because you know, people think of him mainly as a singer, but he wrote for a lot of people as well, didn't he?
You know what I found, Barry, as I was doing this book? Now, I worked with Gene for well over 20 years. And when you work with somebody that long, I still asked a lot of questions, because while I worked with him, I was still a fan. So I was always asking questions, but it didn't really dawn on me until I did the book. Gene was sort of the link between the 50s and 60s,
yeah.
when singers did not write their songs, to the 60s with the Beatles and Bob Dylan and the Stones, where they did write their songs, because Gene was one of the first singer-songwriters. He did write Hello, Mary Lou.
Yeah, I couldn't
Ricky
believe
Nelson.
That when I saw that one. I mean, I knew he'd written Rubber Ball for Bobby V, and I had a feeling he did something for Ray Orbison, but I didn't realize he wrote Hello, Mary Lou.
He did, and he also wrote He's a Rebel for the Crystals.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So he had three massive hits as a songwriter really before he had his first biggest hit, and that was always his plan. In the beginning, Gene had no intention of being a performer. He was very shy as a child, as a high schooler. And, you know, as he got older, he knew how to turn that on and off. He could control that. He was still a very shy man, very private. But when he had to meet fans or he had to do interviews, mm-hmm. obviously go out and sing, he could compartmentalize that shyness and that reclusiveness and put it over to one side when he had to do the other things. So till the day he died, he was shy. He was never overly outgoing. He was a friendly guy. He was a pleasant man, very nice man, but very shy.
He nearly got a Golden Globe, didn't he, one time early on? But
that's right.
He came second or something. I can't think what beat him, something.
That's right. So that was Town Without Pity.
Right.
And that song was nominated for an Academy Award, also nominated for the Golden Globe. And the Golden Globes were put out by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. He did win that award. He won the Golden Globe. The Academy Award that year went to Moon River by Henry Mancini.
Ah,
okay,
right. Yep.
And, you know, Gene always said, sometimes jokingly, but sometimes seriously, you wonder how his career would have been different had he won an Academy Award for Town Without Pity. He had a great career without winning that Oscar, but he always did wonder what would have happened
yeah.
had he won that Oscar.
Yeah. Mind you, Moon River's a bit of a classic to lose to, isn't it, when you think about
beautiful,
it?
Beautiful song.
Right.
And you don't get better than Henry Mancini,
no,
I think,
no, indeed.
When it comes to writing songs.
No, indeed. So getting back about, you know, songs like that. I mean, he did a lot, Burt Bacharach and Hal David, a lot of people, you know, were singing Petula Clark and all that sort of stuff, were singing lots of songs by him, them at that time. But one of his songs, and I was confused about this because I thought that his Man Who Shot Liberty Valance was from the film, but it wasn't in the film, was it?
It was not, and that's one of the quirky things in my book, and I put it in the introduction. So I wrote that book 3 years ago. It finally got published in, it just took 3 years to write. So it got published in October of 2021. Now in 2021, at that point, the song Liberty Valance is almost 50 years old. Mm. The people who wrote that song were already in their mid-20s. So when I'm writing the book in 2019, these are people close to 80, a little bit older. And it's hard to remember what you did 50 years ago.
Totally.
And then it's even harder to remember when you were a prolific songwriter and jumping from one recording session to another, working with this artist on Monday, that artist on Wednesday. So with Liberty Valance, you will see three or four different versions of the story about why it was not in the film. They're all variations on a theme. Nobody lied, but they all had different memories. It's like a eyewitness to a car accident.
Right.
You ask four people who saw a car accident, you're going to get four different stories, all variations on a theme. So that's what you'll read in the book. You'll read Gene's version. You'll read a couple of other versions. But the version I go with, and I believe is true, Hal David,
okay,
the man who wrote the lyrics to Liberty Valance,
right,
simply put it very simply, John Ford, who directed the motion picture, which starred Lee Marvin, Jimmy Stewart, I think a couple of other people were in there. John Ford was an old-time Hollywood producer. He had no interest in having a little, what he would have said, a little pop song in his movie. So you go ahead and keep your little pop song out of my movie. So while Hal David and Burt Bacharach got paid by Paramount Pictures to write the song, Gene Pitney got paid by Paramount Pictures to record the song, John Ford said, uh-uh. So it never went in the Paramount picture, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, because John Ford didn't want it in there.
Wow. Your book, Gene Pitney, The Singer, The Songs, The Songwriters. One of the things, he was very popular in England. Sort of same sort of time as Neil Sedaka, Bobby V, Del Shannon, that sort of period of time. But the one that I remember the biggest, and I don't know if it was the biggest in the UK, but the one that I definitely remember of all of his in the UK, which was most perhaps bigger hit in the UK than it was in America, was the 24 Hours from Tulsa. That's the one I always associate with Gene Pitney.
So it was bigger in the UK than the United States.
Okay.
And Gene used to call those kind of songs, those kind of records, association records. So people associate singers with certain songs. Tom Jones, It's Not Unusual to Be Loved, right? So in the UK, because that was his first hit over there, and that was the song he went over to promote on his first UK tour. So that became the song that his UK fans originally associated him with. Obviously, he then went on to greater success with even bigger hits in the UK. And it came at a time, because I'm just doing research on another book, and I was just reading about 24 Hours from Tulsa. Mm-hmm. It came at a time right in the middle of the British invasion,
right,
when the Beatles are red hot, and the Rolling Stones are red hot, and the Dave Clark Five is red hot. All of a sudden, here comes this good-looking, clean-cut American guy
coming
with a nice
way,
little conservative haircut, singing what they call a story song. This is like a Marty Robbins country western story song.
Indeed.
And it becomes this huge hit, a big hit in the United States, but a huge hit in England.
Right.
It did take everybody's surprise, including Gene and Hal and David and Musicore Records. But it was a good surprise because it established him as a star in the United Kingdom. And then Gene took that to a couple of next levels, up and up and up, by continually visiting Great Britain, continually touring that country, making a lot of friends in the press, a lot of friends in the music industry. When I wrote this book, Barry, and this, I find this very odd, because I work with other artists. I work with Dion.
Yep.
I worked with Peter Noon, Herman's Hermits, for many years, Bobby V, a couple of others. Anytime I have talked to anybody in the music business about Gene Pitney, they only have good things to say about him. These are people
I agree totally.
Were enamored by his talent. Yep. But Gene also had this gift of connecting. Like I mentioned before, he could turn it on and off. He was very shy. Mm. But Gene was very good at connecting with people and then staying in contact with them. And that's so important in the music business, networking.
Yeah.
Because you don't know where your next hit was going to come from back in the 1960s when you weren't writing them for yourself.
Prime example, Rolling Stones. That's
right.
Going to shake a few people. Yeah. Gene Pitney, Rolling Stones. Yeah.
Yep. He wrote they wrote what eventually was a big hit for Gene, but also became the first Rolling Stones written song. I didn't say that right, did I, Barry? The first Rolling Stones written song that became a chart hit in the United States. Mick and Keith wrote That Girl Belongs to Yesterday.
Right.
And as I mentioned in my book, you can go see the Rolling Stones version of that song on YouTube. They did a demo on it. You can't see it. You can hear it. They did a demo on it. And I don't think anybody would argue with me. Mick Jagger is a fabulous, fabulous entertainer. He's a mediocre singer.
Oh, yeah.
And you can tell that on this version of the song when you hear their version, which was originally titled My Only Girl. I'm not sure who changed the title of That Girl Belongs to Yesterday. Gene didn't remember. But when you go listen to the Rolling Stones, you kind of hear the melody in there, and you kind of hear the song. So what happened, Gene had done a TV show in Birmingham with the Rolling Stones, Thank Your Lucky Stars.
Right, yeah.
Which people in Britain will remember.
Yep.
And that's where he met them. And that's where he met Andrew Luke Oldham, who was essentially their manager at the time. But he was also doing press and publicity for Gene. So he just introduced them to each other. And at that time, Gene was now looking for another hit record in England. He had had Tulsa, and he needed another song. And Mick and Keith said, well, you know, they really didn't want to write pop songs. You know, the Stones came from an R&B background. Andrew was sort of pushing him in that direction. You write a couple pop songs, get on the charts, become famous, and then go in your direction that you want to go. But you got to become famous first.
Yeah.
So Andrew Lou Goldham was pushing the Stones in that direction. They had this song called My Only Girl, / That Girl Belongs to Yesterday. Gene said, well, give it to me. Let me live with it a few days, and do you mind if I play with it? Now, a track was already recorded, but the melody really wasn't brought out in the track. Again, you can go listen to that on YouTube.
Right.
So Gene lived with it. He already had the track, so he had some limitations, but he improved on the melody. And so what you hear on the Gene Pitney record, That Girl Belongs to Yesterday, is the Rolling Stones track written by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, and really the infused melody from Gene Pitney. Gene refused to take songwriter credit on it, and he said, listen, if I wouldn't want that done to me. You know, if I wrote a song and I gave it to somebody and they changed this word and that word or a couple of notes and demanded songwriter credits, I would not like that. Now, the reason they would do that, just in case somebody doesn't know, you get publishing credits. You make a lot more money as a songwriter than you do as a singer. And Gene refused to take a songwriting credit on it, although he had a lot to do with changing that song.
Didn't he play the piano on something of theirs as well?
Well, that's on that album, the very first album Rolling Stones put out, called England's Newest Hitmakers, the Rolling Stones.
Right.
Gene Pitney plays piano on one of the tracks called Little by Little.
Okay.
Phil Spector's on there as well. And Gene may, I'm not quite sure, Gene may have played on another song too. Okay. That was just one of those deals where the Stones were in the studio, Gene was passing through, and again, Andrew Luke Oldham was the Stones' manager. He was Gene's press person. He invited Gene to the studio. The story goes that the Stones were not getting along together. Of course, they were probably drinking and probably bickering.
Yep.
So Andrew brought in some folks maybe just to kind of leaven things a little bit, lighten things up.
Right.
Gene was one of them. He ended up playing piano on Little by Little. And that's how his name shows up on a Rolling Stones album.
There you go.
As
See?
funny as that seems, but it's true.
In your book, Gene Pitney, the singer, the songs, the songwriter, do you go into how you became involved with Gene Pitney?
I do. And that's one of those stories, and I'll try to telescope it for you, Barry. I grew up in Milwaukee, one of eight children. We had no money. I had no idea what I wanted to do in life until I was in the fifth grade, and my mother gave me a radio for a Christmas present. And my mother also always had the radio on when we would get up to go to school in the morning in the kitchen. The radio would always be on. It would be on the top 40 station. So I would be hearing the songs, the hit songs of the day. And by the time I got into eighth grade, I knew I wanted to be on the radio. And I was going to a little restaurant in Milwaukee with a friend of mine from school. And he went over and played the jukebox. And the song he played was Town Without Pity by Gene Pitney. Right. Now, the friend of mine happened to be who I thought was the coolest guy in our school. There was nobody cooler than my friend Tony. Tony came back to the table and said, Dave, this guy is cool. Gene Pitney is cool. So, of course, if Tony says he's cool, he must be cool.
He must be cool, right?
So, you know what? And then, you know, Town Without Pity is a great song. And then he followed it up with, you know, Liberty Valance and Man Who Shall Only Love Can Break a Heart.
Yep.
And then I finally realized I really like Gene Pitney. Now, I have no musical abilities, Barry. I cannot sing. I cannot play an instrument. I cannot dance. The closest I could ever get to being part of the music industry at that point in my life was to get into radio, which I did. Mm-hmm. Long story, nobody cares, but I got into radio. Then I made it my mission to get to know Gene Pitney, because I really wanted to know Gene Pitney, talk to Gene Pitney, and I wanted to work for him. I wanted to be part of that magic, that career. Well, through a series of events, I finally got his phone number. We talked a few times. We kept in touch. He would send me postcards when he went over to London or wherever he went. Just, how you doing? The tour's going great, etc. One day, Barry, I'm living now in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is centrally located between Chicago, Illinois, and Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Not a small town, but not a big town. I'm in my kitchen because I'm replacing the kitchen floor. Now, at that point, I've known Gene for maybe, known him by phone, never met, known him by phone, and we exchanged letters and stuff. I get a phone call, and I pick it up. Hi, this is Dave. He says, Dave, this is Gene Pitney. Now, I don't know if I should believe that or not. I don't know if one of my friends is playing a trick on me, right? Or if it's really Gene Pitney.
Right.
Fortunately, I didn't say anything stupid. I just, hi, Gene.
Yeah.
He came to me with a business proposal.
Uh-huh.
He said, look, my sisters are running my fan club from a shoebox on the kitchen table. And fan clubs at that time, and they still are, the main purpose of fan clubs was to get tour dates out to fans.
Yeah.
So they knew when Gene Pitney was coming to Detroit or Milwaukee or whatever. And some fan clubs then had been starting to sell merchandise, but the real thing was tour dates and just keep the artists connected with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his sisters were running it from a shoebox on the kitchen table. At that point, I had been doing a little bit of work with an American band called Styx. And I had told that to Gene. I said, I'm doing some merchandise work with them because a friend of mine works with them, blah, 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 blah. He calls me that day and says, will you run my fan club?
There you go.
Wow. And I said, I'd love to. He said, I'm also going to start working in the United States again. At that point now, his kids were getting a little older. You know, he had quit touring or cut back on touring for a while because he wanted to be home with his kids. Now the kids are getting older. He had kind of left his American career fall by the wayside. You know what he always said, Barry? If I have the choice to play in Paris or Peoria, Illinois, I'm going to Paris. So he concentrated on Europe, England, and the continent, and Australia. But he wanted to revive his American career. And I said, I'd love to do merchandise on that. He said, oh, make me an offer. You know what? I came up with an offer for him. He hired me, and I started working with Gene doing merchandise on tours in 1985. And then one thing led to another. We became great personal friends. He became a mentor to me because I knew nothing about the music business. And I tell you what, Barry, there's a lot to learn,
about what
to do and what not to do.
Right.
Because at that point, I didn't know what I should or shouldn't do. Gene taught me all that. And he gave me, and he did it in a nice way.
That's good.
And he helped me, and he got me through every step of the way to the point where, I think I mentioned, he became best man at my wedding in 1998.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, indeed, yeah.
After Gene, I then started to work at the same time with Peter Noon from Herman's Hermits. So anytime, you know, we were working with Peter out on the East Coast.
I'd like to have a show just about that, because not many people... I played four different hits with different groups by him the other day, including Green Button and stuff like that. A couple of... a heavy one by Peter Noon. Anyway, congratulations, by the way, on this book, because I know it's doing very well. But we are doing well, except we're running out of time. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, David, and have you tell everybody where they can pick up this wonderful book and find out more information about that and, of course, about yourself. So over to you.
Hey, Barry, it's very nice of you. Again, thanks for the invitation. The book is called Gene Pitney, The Singer, The Songs, The Songwriters. And I took that perspective because I just didn't think at this time there was a market for a biography on Gene.
Right.
And I figured when you bring the songwriters in, Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, Burt Bacharach, Hal David, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Carole King, that arena of interest becomes wider.
Indeed, sir.
All of a sudden now you've got people coming in, oh, Burt Bacharach wrote that. Oh, the Rolling Stones wrote that.
Yep.
So that's why I went this route with The Singer, The Songs, The Songwriters. It's put out by Waterside Publications. It's available at Amazon.com. And they fulfill your order very quickly. We also have a website, genepitneybook.com, which will link you to Amazon websites in just about every country in the world.
Okay.
So if you're in Australia and you go to genepitneybook.com, you'll find the Amazon site for Australia. It's got background on me on that website. I'm in radio full-time. That's what I do for a living. I'm a radio newsman.
Mm-hmm.
But Gene was always... music's always been my passion. Gene was my very first musical hero, and he's still my musical hero to this day. Gene Pitney, The Singer, The Songs, The Songwriters, Amazon.com.
Well, thank you so much, David. It's been terrific, really. I was looking forward to today's show, as I said to you before. And I know you and I could most likely go on for another hour on this, but time beats us anyway. But thank you so much for being a guest on the show. And good luck with Gene Pitney, The Singer, The Songs, and The Songwriters. And as you say, you might have something else coming on, perhaps. But we'll wait for that. Meanwhile,
yes, we do.
Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Well, there you go. What about that, eh? David McGrath, McGrath, like the cricketer, David. Not you. You Americans got no idea what I'm talking about. David McGrath and his book, Fascinating, great book. Gene Pitney, The Singer, The Songs, The Songwriters. Lots you learn, I tell you. And it's great to learn stuff like that and appreciate a talent like there was and how David sort of got there and what he did and how he's come from that way. As he says, he's still a radio station. I think it's WGTD, something like that he works on.